Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. So from the first few debates and the candidates campaigning on the trail, we know that climate change, gun control, and health care are very big Democratic issues. But one issue missing from the debates that affects everyone from the East Coast to the West and in between is housing and the cost of it, as we don't have to tell most of you in greater New York, just keeps going up and up. It was only mentioned seven times. I did a word search. The word housing came up seven times during the 3 hours last night, three of those mentions by one candidate, Cory Booker, and with no actual questions on the topic. But President Trump is now turning the large homeless populations of big cities into a political weapon against the Democrats who run those cities. Is there a policy here to take seriously? Here is Trump and Fox News host Tucker Carlson on the issue.
You come to where we are now, Osaka or Tokyo, and the cities are clean. There's no graffiti, no one going to the bathroom on the street. You don't see junkies.
It's very nice, isn't it?
Very different from our cities.
Yep. Well, no, some of our cities.
Some of our cities. But New York City, San Francisco, Los Angeles, they've got a major problem with...
It's very sad.
With filth.
Very sad.
Why is that?
Too. Although some of them have mental problems where they don't even know they're living that way. In fact, perhaps they like living that way. They can't do that. We cannot ruin our cities. And this is the liberal establishment. This is what I'm fighting.
Well, there were a number of false statements in there that could be fact-checked. We don't have to go point by point. But the political argument in it was at the end. This is the liberal establishment. This is what I'm fighting, said Donald Trump. Now, in California, home of the largest homeless population in the country, of course, it's the largest state, so that would be expected, Trump wants to take specific actions, and this is where the news is. He wants to outlaw homeless camps. People live in tents there sometimes, especially where it's warmer year-round, and relocate people into federally subsidized buildings, or so he says. Would he even follow through with it? But here were some thoughts on what the president is doing and how Democrats are approaching the issue when they do approach it on the campaign trail is Brookings Institution Metropolitan Policy Program Director Jenny Schutz. Jenny, welcome to WNYC. Hi.
Good to be here.
So yesterday before the debate, and I'm going to let people in on a little behind-the-scenes factoid here, housing advocates yesterday, with help from Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and the so-called group of congresswomen known as the Squad, the other ones, try to elevate the issue of housing affordability. And to be honest, we booked you for today, as you know, assuming it would come up in the debate, but it didn't. Were you surprised?
A little bit surprised and disappointed. Housing is certainly an issue that affects every household. It's the largest single expense in most families' monthly budget. So when we think about the sort of kitchen table economic issues families are concerned with, they are concerned with whether they have a job and whether their job allows them to pay the bills, including pay the rent or the mortgage. So this is an issue that, in fact, a number of the candidates have been talking about on the campaign trail. They're certainly hearing from their constituents that this is a concern. It's a little bit of a shame that the moderators didn't give the candidates a chance on the stage last night to get into some of the differences and the ways that they would try to make housing more affordable.
Are you aware of what Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez and the other members of the Squad are proposing, since they were out there yesterday trying to, you know, put this in the debate moderator's bullseye?
I've heard a couple of clips where AOC was saying that housing is a human right, and I believe that she has also talked about calling for some sort of a national version of rent control or rent regulation.
And California just passed something like that, didn't they?
They did. California is actually the third state this year that has passed some sort of a statewide rent regulation or increased it. In February of this year, Oregon became the first state to pass a statewide cap on rent increases. So this isn't a hard rent control where the state says you're only allowed to charge $1,000 a month for a studio, but what they do is put a cap on how much landlords can increase rent each year when the lease rolls over. So Oregon set that cap at 7 percentage points over the CPI, over the rate of inflation. California made theirs a little bit tighter, so it's 5% plus CPI. So if the overall cost of living goes up, say, 3% in 1 year, landlords would only be allowed to raise the rent on their tenants 8 percentage points. So this is, you know, obviously going to be better for families who are facing, say, an unexpected increase of 20% in their rent. But this could have some real consequences for the overall California housing market.
Would you expect, based on your own perspective and your own research at Brookings, that that new California law will have an impact on the extent of homelessness in the state?
Well, California has created itself a situation that's sort of like playing musical chairs. There are more people who want to rent apartments in California than there are apartments available. So landlords naturally respond to this by raising the rent. This is what you do in a market when there's excess demand. You raise the rent. So the state is taking away one tool for landlords, but it's not doing what it really needs to do in the long run, which is to build more apartments. And in a sense, tenants don't need as much protection, legal protection, if there are just apartments available. If your landlord raises the rent by 15 or 20%, but you can find an equivalent apartment in another neighborhood in the city for less money, then tenants can just move. The problem is that California tenants really just don't have enough options because the housing supply hasn't kept up with demand for really nearly 30 years at this point.
The Washington Post has a major article today on Trump inserting himself into this issue. The headline is "Obstacles for Trump's Homelessness Plans. Similar initiatives haven't worked in the past." And it starts by saying President Trump's emerging plan to address California's homeless crisis include ideas that have been tried unsuccessfully before, namely the mass housing of people living on the streets and proposals that have been ruled illegal by federal courts. I think that pertains to the civil right to sleep on the street if you want to, meaning not to be housed in a shelter. So have you looked at what Trump is proposing? Is he actually proposing anything, or is he just taking pot shots on Twitter?
Well, we don't have a lot of details about what he would do. The sort of reports are that they would try to relocate people who are living on the streets, particularly in encampments, so they have their belongings with them and are living on sidewalks or public spaces. And the language that I'm reading is that they would move them to federally owned facilities, but it's not at all clear what that means. The federal government doesn't have a bunch of apartment buildings or shelters around that are just waiting for people to move in. If they did, we should have been using those already. It's true that in some sense what the Trump administration is proposing is not that different from what cities have done from time to time. Cities like Los Angeles and Seattle and Washington, D.C., periodically go through and get rid of these sort of encampments that have large numbers of homeless people. And they generally do this under local laws. For instance, if there is a public health concern that these are, if there are diseases that are spreading, or if these can be prosecuted under local nuisance laws for people sleeping on the street. So local governments have some authority to remove encampments. In California, homeless advocates have pushed back against that and said, for instance, the police can't go in and throw away their personal possessions even when people aren't there to protect them. So especially in California, I think it would be quite hard for the federal government to go in and just remove these encampments, and particularly because it's not clear where they would put people.
Listeners, is there anything you would like to see from the current president or a potential future Democratic president with respect to national policy on housing? We know what goes on locally with Mayor de Blasio in the city and other localities in our listening area around New York City. What about national policy? Is there anything that you've seen from a presidential hopeful or from the president that has grabbed your attention? What do you think about his proposal for California, which you know, maybe is not to be taken seriously, but interesting that he's talking about it. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692 for Jenny Schutz, a fellow in the Brookings Institution Metropolitan Policy Program. Are there any of the Democratic hopefuls who you would say are out front on this issue?
There are four candidates who have all put out very credible, solid proposals. So Cory Booker, Joaquin Castro, Amy Klobuchar, and Elizabeth Warren all have talked about sort of the most important issues. Number one, that low-income families essentially just don't earn enough money to pay the cost of kind of a minimum quality apartment. And so they all have proposals to essentially supplement the income or provide more subsidy for those low-income families. All three of them have also acknowledged the fact that in places like California, New York, D.C., Boston, the private market hasn't been allowed to build enough housing because of local government regulations. And all three of them are starting to get at some ideas for ways that the federal government could incentivize local governments to relax their zoning and allow more construction. They're also focusing on some really important differences in housing well-being between particularly Black and Latino families and white families. So there's a big racial gap in homeownership rates and in overall household wealth, largely driven by past discriminatory housing policies like redlining. So those four candidates have very credible proposals to deal with all three of these issues. There are some minor differences between them, but all of them would represent substantial improvements over our current policies.
Ed on Staten Island, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ed.
Morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Frequent listener to the show.
Thank you.
My suggestion is that we do the obvious, which is build the housing that we need, public housing, keep it as a publicly owned asset for perpetuity so that we can decrease the pressure on the bottom of the housing market, and that way supply and demand, the prices will go down.
Thank you very much. So, Jenny, he says something that sounds simple on its face. Build more public housing. Most of the public housing that we really consider public housing, and I don't mean subsidized housing like the plan, you know, like what de Blasio is doing and what gets done in a lot of places now, which is to allow market rate housing to come in with certain subsidies so that percentages are affordable, or other kinds of subsidized housing. That's different than the old public housing projects, which oddly enough is a little bit what Trump's plan sounds like, right? If he's talking about putting up federal buildings for homeless people in California and presumably elsewhere to move into, I mean, that's the project, right?
It might be. It's not clear that he's talking about necessarily building more public housing. I'd say there are three big obstacles to just building federally owned public housing to solve this. One is that HUD doesn't have money to construct new public housing, and Congress under both parties has not shown a lot of interest in allocating money to construct this. The second is even if local housing authorities had money to build new buildings, they don't have land to put them on. So especially in some of these high-cost cities, in New York, in Los Angeles, San Francisco, even if the federal government owns some land, it can't just go build an apartment building until it gets permission from the local government to do that. One of the obstacles we're running into with not just subsidized housing but market rate housing is that local governments essentially are blocking the development of apartment buildings, high-density housing that would be affordable. The federal government doesn't have authority over land use, and so it can't just go in and build an apartment building and say, now we're going to put poor people in it. Mm-hmm. The third obstacle is that we have not done a great job at maintaining the public housing we have. And so in many cities, there's been sort of an acknowledgement that rather than own the housing itself, that we're going to partner with nonprofit agencies to build and manage public housing, but that the public sector has really stepped back and taken a direct responsibility for this.
One more call. Cy in Queens. You're on WNYC. Hi, Cy.
Hello, Brian. I love your show. So in Japan, they have a nationally controlled development process where they have an emphasis on developing more residential housing than anything else. And affordability there is less of an issue than it is here. Now, there might be arguments for, you know, decreasing population problems and what have you, but we also face a problem in New York City where NIMBYism exists almost everywhere, where the areas where there, say, that are closest to the subway, where we could have significant amounts of development to allow for more affordable types of housing, people just don't want the types of development. Mm-hmm. We have significant, you know, and housing in general just costs way too much for a lot of folks. And if we just had supply of housing and it takes up less of people's incomes, they could, you know, afford to live in bigger cities where the costs are higher.
Right. So I thank you very much. And yes, how to make supply and incentivize the market to create supply, or spend tax dollars to create supply to meet demand so that they even out a little bit more to make housing affordable. Jenny, we're just about out of time, but, you know, the premise of Cy's call was that Japan, for example, has national control over development. And so it's hard for the presidential candidates to come up with a lot of national housing policy because it's considered generally a local issue, not entirely, but generally a local issue. Is there any model from any other country of national housing policy that you think it's interesting to mention here?
So other countries do have a more national control over planning, have an easier time with it. You know, under our federal system, it's hard to imagine that the federal government is going to take over control over land use. It could use some financial carrots and sticks more effectively to incentivize local governments. And the other big thing that the U.S. government could do that other countries do is just giving more money to poor people. So fundamentally, low-income housing is a problem of income, not a problem of high housing costs. The U.S. spends less money on a social safety net than most other developed countries. If we gave more money to poor people, we could make their lives better.
Jenny Schutz, fellow in the Brookings Institution Metropolitan Policy Program, talking about an issue that we thought was going to come up more directly in the debate last night, but did not. Housing. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and more to come.